Well, my dears, as we've often discussed on the Little Wireless program, China has been rather rude to religions. It's done its best to crush Buddhism in Tibet. It's demolished mosques. It's sent Muslims to those dreadful internment camps. It's also demolished a few Christian churches. But there's another side to the story. Well, there usually is. Now, I know that communism is notionally atheistic. In fact, when I was a teenage communist, I was rather miffed to discover that the Kremlin had sort of cut a deal with the Orthodox Church, taking the view it was better to have it inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in, to paraphrase Lyndon Johnson. But yes, basically, communists are atheists. And in the great communist revolutions in Russia and China, religious iconography was destroyed, prayer and worship frequently banned, and religious leaders arrested by the truckload. Marx famously said that religion was the opium of the masses, and thus communists were by definition godless. But the Chinese Communist Party is godless no more. This heretical view is expressed by my next guest, Ian Johnson. Ian's been covering China for many years as a correspondent for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, among others. Back in 2001, he won the Pulitzer for his coverage of the persecution of Falun Gong. And Ian is the author of The Souls of China, The Return of Religion After Mao. And he has a new article in Foreign Affairs titled How the State is Co-opting Religion in China. And he joins us now from Beijing. Ian, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
During the last 40 years, we've seen an incredible change in China when it comes to economic freedom. As Deng famously said, to get rich is glorious, but they have also always maintained religious control. Now, why has the Chinese Communist Party decided to loosen the reins on religious expression?
Well, I think there's this feeling in China that's been widespread for the past decade or so that society has no values, that those economic reforms that you mentioned, that they'd led to prosperity, of course, but also a feeling that there was nothing else in society except making money. And people began to feel that there was no minimum moral standards. Anything was okay as long as you got ahead. And over the past few years, there have been many events that have taken place, videos that have gone viral showing people who have had mishaps on the street, been knocked over, and nobody goes to help them because nobody wants to get involved. Those sort of things have created a great unease in the population. And I think the party recognizes that and wants to be to guide this trend and not just let it happen spontaneously. So it is supporting some religions, but not other religions.
Well, as you point out, if you're a cult like Falun Gong, you get a kick in the backside.
Absolutely, yes. No, it very much determines who's acceptable and who's not acceptable. And so we have a few religions right now that are being persecuted while others are enjoying immense state support.
Ian, going back to my teenage years as a communist, it always seemed to me, even then, that communism saw itself as a religion. And it had so many parallels with religion, you know, in terms of, well, excommunication, it had its index, it had confessional techniques, all sorts of things. There's some truth in that, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Mao put himself forward increasingly after 1949 when the communists took over. He put himself forward as a godhead, and it culminated in the Cultural Revolution from 1966 to 76, with Mao supplanting all religions, and his collected writings, the Little Red Book, were almost an ersatz Bible. and Mao was the great helmsman rising in the east like the sun, and people had to say morning prayers to him and in the evening report back on what they'd done. So that was pushed, but it didn't succeed.
The last time I was in China, there was the neo-Maoist move was on, with quite a few Maoist era heroes being recycled.
Yeah, it's similar, say, to Russia, where you have people who are nostalgic for the Stalinist era. There's this myth that in the Mao era, everyone was equal and there wasn't the radical gulf between rich and poor that you have now in China, which is, of course, true because everyone was equally poor back then. But this feeling of unfairness that a lot of people have today, I think that's another trend, that people just feel that the system is rigged and it's really hard to get ahead unless you know the right people. That it was sort of better in the Mao era. So that's
it was interesting, wasn't it, during the time of Glasnost and Perestroika, that suddenly there was an eruption of religiosity on the streets of Moscow. You know, suddenly every second American evangelical outfit arrived in town, and there was boom business if you were into iconography.
Yeah, and then afterwards, when Putin took over, he went from being an ex-KGB man to having a road to Damascus moment, and there is a sort of story about how he had an injury and he turned into a God-fearing Orthodox and a great patron of the church, which is a strange twist.
But that demonstrates something that Beijing knows as well. You can't wipe out religion. It simply goes underground.
Right. This is what states throughout history have all tried to do. Religion is something that's intensely personal. It's, by definition, it's close to people's hearts, but it also affects how they live their lives, and that's something states often try to control. So we see these battles, of course, in Europe as well, in the medieval times, in the Enlightenment, Reformation, but it's going on in China right now with great ferocity.
Ian, did the communist Chinese, experiment at all with Confucianism as a method of making people better behaved?
Confucianism is not officially classified as a religion. It has a sort of quasi-religious side to it. There were temples to Confucius in all Chinese cities, etc. But it is pushed as a kind of cultural knowledge that is good for society. So a lot of all the major universities in China have centers of Confucian studies. You can find the Confucian classics sold at airports and things like that. But it isn't being brought back as an official religion.
You emphasize the importance of folk religion. The Chinese government seems quite happy with that.
Yeah, I think they like the religions that they think of as indigenous or domestic, such as Taoism, folk religion, or sort of ancestor worship, and then also Buddhism, which of course started in India but has been in China for about 2,000 years. So they view that as essentially a local religion. They feel comfortable with those religions. They think those religions we can kind of control. But Christianity and Islam, even though they've been in China for a long time, they're still seen as foreign religions, or at least religions with strong ties overseas. And this is viewed skeptically by the government.
You point out in your article that while the Communist Party is terrified by the individualistic aspect of Protestantism, that fear doesn't extend to Catholicism.
Well, they had a big problem with Catholicism. They had, just as with Protestantism, they had an official church, which is recognized by the government, and the bishops and priests are registered with the government. But they also had a big underground church. So they've tried two different tactics. With Protestantism, they've tried more of a crackdown, closing down prominent churches. With Catholicism, they've tried diplomacy, hence the deal last year with the Vatican, where the Vatican would recognize some bishops that were appointed by Beijing, and in exchange, in theory at least, the Pope would have some sort of say in how bishops are appointed in the future. And that, in theory, makes the underground church superfluous, because if everyone's happy, then there's no need to have an underground church, because the Pope is recognizing the above-ground church. Now, that's Beijing's hope. I don't know really if Chinese Catholics will entirely go for it. It's still a bit early.
Well, I have to say the Vatican went for accommodations with Hitler in the 30s. There's a long tradition of the Vatican doing deals.
Well, the Vatican, you know, they've had to deal with states throughout history, and they've cut deals at times and tried to survive. And I think in China, there was this feeling that Catholicism had been overtaken by many other religions, that 70 years ago or so, Catholicism was much stronger than Protestantism, but now it's very much the other way around. So I think they feel a need to get back in the game by making peace with the government.
Now, Islam, as you point out, presents a different set of problems, because it's a matter of ethnic assimilation as well.
Yeah, Islam is defined essentially as an ethnicity. There are 10 ethnic groups in China that are officially declared to be Muslim. And if you're a member of one of those 10 ethnic groups, you are by definition Muslim. And that's especially the case for the one I think we're most interested in, the Uyghurs, who are out in Xinjiang, which is Central Asia, very close to or bordering Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, etc. And there you have a long history of unrest. And now the government is cracking down with draconian measures and treating Islam really as the problem.
Of course, we've done programs on what's happening to the Uyghurs, and it's pretty unpleasant. I understand, I learned from you, that China's crackdowns on Islam, including forcing Muslim shops to sell tobacco and alcohol.
Yeah, this is, of course, a good pious Muslim should not sell alcohol at all, and tobacco is sort of a borderline case, but a lot of people believe it's a vice, and one shouldn't sell it. And also, restaurants should serve pork, and during Ramadan they should open up during the daytime. Of course, in Ramadan you're supposed to fast during the daytime, but you know, this sort of thing is so ham-handed, so heavy-handed, that I think it's just going to have a terrible blowback in the coming years and decades. I think this is a huge mistake.
Ian, you take us back to the 19th and early 20th century, when the country was invaded and almost carved up by foreign powers. And in response, the country's elites of that era, and I quote, turned on traditional religion, seeing them as superstitious, backward beliefs that were holding back the country's modernization.
That was something that was not entirely unique to China. You had a similar situation in the Ottoman Empire when it collapsed after World War I. The modern state of Turkey was formed by a radical secularist, Kemal Ataturk, didn't allow men to have full beards, didn't allow women to wear the headscarf, and even turned a couple of mosques into museums. And across the world, many people viewed religion as a problem, holding back society. This is the real high modernist approach, that religion is a problem, and as people move forward and become enlightened and rational, they'll realize they don't need it. And some countries just tried to force it through. And
well,
that's
as a lifelong atheist, I have some sympathy with that argument, but you also argue that this new rapprochement with religion that you're describing has echoes of the imperial era. How so?
Well, in the imperial era, the state also supported religions. They backed some and opposed others. The emperor was the son of heaven, and the state patronized many religions in China, but didn't patronize others. Again, it didn't patronize Islam and didn't patronize Christianity. So there are a lot of parallels to, say, 100 years ago.
Tell me about the co-opting of religion and its relationship to the broader social changes we've been reading about in the last year or so, things like the social credit system.
Yeah, this is a way to force morality on people by giving everyone a credit score, sort of like you might have a financial credit score if you've failed your defaulted on your home loan or something like that. If you also say jaywalk in China, this is in theory and is only being experimented with. One shouldn't jump too much to conclusions. But again, this feeling that society is out of control, if you have cameras at every street corner, which you do in China, and if you have facial recognition software, which you do, you can find out who is behaving properly, who is, say, turning right on red and pushing pedestrians out of the way and honking their horn and acting like an ass. You can then penalize those people, or people say jaywalking or riding their motor scooters on the sidewalk, which is unfortunately a daily phenomenon here in Beijing. Those things can be brought to control through this kind of technology, and in a way, it's similar to it's just kind of forced morality, right? Technological morality.
Ian, how are Falun Gong faring?
Well, Falun Gong is not really existent in China in any public way. I'm sure there are people who still practice it in their living room. Abroad, it's much more present. You still see outside of Chinese embassies and consulates people who protest. There's a newspaper run by Falun Gong adherents in exile, Epoch Times. A television, satellite television network called New Tang Dynasty Television. But those, it's sort of small. In China, it doesn't play much of a role anymore.
Have you found yourself the target of harassment from the Chinese government?
Occasionally, you know, it depends what you're covering and what you're reporting on. I've flown into areas and been followed right away. I was going to go a couple of years ago, I was going to go to a Chinese province where they had been removing the crosses from the spires of churches. And I went in there and met a pastor, and right afterwards was being followed around. And when I got on a train and left the province, the people following me, they were just the local provincial public security bureau. They just left me alone. And I got on the train and took off and left the province. And then I got on another train an hour or two later and came back into the province and everything was fine. So you sometimes have to play a bit of cat and mouse, but it really depends what you're after, what you're reporting on.
I'm talking, or have been talking, to Ian Johnson, Pulitzer Prize winner and author of The Souls of China, The Return to Religion After Mao. And Ian was talking to us from, guess where, Beijing. Thank you very much, Ian.